All right. Well, hey, everybody. It's really good to see everybody. I'm Mick. I'm giving the precept talk for this evening. The way that I do these is I start just trying to jot things down as I go through my day. I would guess maybe like a month ago, I just started thinking like, okay, well, how am I going to do this? And I end up with just like a big mess of stuff. And then I try to like find a theme in it, you know, like how can I divide this stuff into ways that make sense? And I got to tell you, friends, we're going to see how this goes. I have like got a notebook, got regular books, I've got bookmarks, I got. So it's going to be, we're just going to see how it goes. I don't know. This one was really fun. This is actually, I come to realize, this is my first rave precept talk. I've given a couple talks before on pure precepts and then on precepts of path, but this is my first rave one. So we're going to see how it goes. I did, because I'm like a thematic person, I wanted to talk for a little bit about the precepts in general, and how I understand the precepts. So Tyler gave a great talk in Precepts of Path. We have a recording of it, and it's really great. And I really like that kind of a thing. And one of the things that he had mentioned was that the precepts started, and there were these, and we've kind of come to a term for them as what we call like Vinaya precepts. And those were sort of like a monastic, like rules for monastic living, you know? And the Vinaya precepts are like don't go get seconds before everybody's had their first scoop of rice, like things like that. And the notion that Dogen really wanted for his precepts were that the precepts are practice enlightenment. Like they're not just a set of rules for how to maintain order. Like all of the teachings are wrapped entirely in the precept. And so I think that that's a really important way that I've come to think about the precepts, is that these are it. This is a whole entire slice of the Dharma tomato. And it's all right here. And there's like a couple of like hints in the Kyoji Kaimon where he kind of like, let's do it. But I just find like, I find it so important. At the very beginning of the Kyoji Kaimon, he says, the great precepts of the Buddhas are kept carefully by the Buddhas. Now the Arani says, this is the meaning of the transmission of living wisdom. Like this is it. And then at the very end, he says, within these precepts dwell the Buddhas, enfolding all things within their unparalleled wisdom. So, I mean, these, they sound great. And as a matter of fact, when I first started my practice, I became so attached to the precepts. I thought this was like the greatest thing I had ever heard. And I remember I had Domio's book, Idiot's Guide to Zen Living, and I would like write out the 16 precepts. I would like quiz myself every day. I would see if I could write them all out, and I would just to make sure I had them and I understood them. And then I was talking to my wife about it. I was like, Rebecca, you're never going to believe it. There are these rules. If you just follow the rules, like things work out. You can live your life in the way that you want to, that's consistent with your values. And she was just kind of like, okay, like, what are these great things? And I was like, well, so for tonight's case, it's don't lie, which, like, we're a group of adults. I think we could all agree that, like, don't lie is a pretty good, like, basic rule. I don't think there's anything profound in it. And it's so interesting to me because like I love these precepts. I have all of the grave precepts, like tattooed on my arm. They're going to be there until I'm a corpse. And like, one of them is don't lie. I feel like you could find that. You could find that Christianity. You could find it in Islam. Like, I think we as grown people agree, like, lying in general is bad. And even to some extent, like, you can say, well, like, in some cases, lying is good, and we can certainly, like, see that too. I live in the South, and you know, we have an awful legacy in the South. But there was a group of people when slavery was extant that, like, ran the Underground Railroad through duplicitousness and lies, and they helped hide people and carry enslaved people to freedom. So, but I feel like we all, as like adults, understand that lying isn't a great thing. But this is a precept that was kept carefully by the Buddhas from Shakyamuni to now. And I have to think, like, what is this precept pointing to? Like, what is it trying to tell us? I'm a mathematician. I have a favorite, like, one of my favorite mathematicians is a gentleman named Takashi Tsukaida, and he's great. And I've seen him do a couple of talks. And what he does in his talks is he goes to everybody and he'll pose a question, like I've just posed to everybody. What's it pointing at? And then what he tells you is you have to make a guess. You have to make it. It's no good if you don't make a guess, because now you have skin in the game. When somebody else talks about what they understand, you have a basis for comparison. So I recognize that maybe we're not all prepared for what's going to happen, but we're going to go into breakout rooms for about 10 minutes. And I want you to make a guess. What is this precept pointing to? Why is this so important? Is it really that we should, like, not lie? I want to see, just like, get some ideas going of like what are we doing here? What is this precept pointing to? What's the lesson? So we're going to go into breakout rooms, and in the dirt, we'll just spread into groups of maybe like four or five. For 10 minutes, we'll just kind of go around. You might want to pen and paper, just because usually when we come out of breakout rooms, we kind of like report back. We might hold the report back on until a little bit later, but I want us to have skin in the game. So I want us to go and talk for about 10 minutes. Tell me what the lesson is here. All right, I'm gonna toss this one out here. I don't know where this fits. It doesn't fit anywhere. I don't really have the answer to this question, but I just haven't been able to let it go, because I've been thinking about precepts a lot. And so, if you go to the if you go to the dictionary and you ask the dictionary what a vow is, they'll tell you that a vow is a sacred promise. And we're all here to either consider taking the precepts as vows, or we have taken the precepts as vows, as this sacred promise. And I cannot, for the life of me, tell you to whom or to what I have promised this thing. And I don't know if you just want to stick that in your brain. If you have a good answer for that, you can send me an email or something. But I have no idea what that is. Because what I want to talk about now is I want to talk about how we practice with these precepts. Because I hope we've kind of established that, like, lying is bad by and large. There are exceptions. So, like, when do we make those exceptions? But if we understand it as not lying, where do we get this profound notion of practice from? I think, like, the way that I think about practicing with the precepts is that it takes a constant revisiting of what it means, in this case, to lie, in every moment, that comes up, I'm going to confront this moment as it is, and I am going to do my best not to carry what I understood from before about lying and not lying and the truth and lies. And that every time this moment comes up, I have with open hands an understanding of moral behavior, of what it means to convey the truth, to not tolerate lying. And there's not a set prescription for that. There's not a right answer to any of this. This, like, for precept practice, for any of the precepts, and with this one in particular, this is not something that you like study for a while and you figure it out and you write it down. And then whenever you forget it, you just go back to your book and you read what you've written. I think when we commit to these precepts, what we're committing to is to confront each new moment as it comes to us, carrying only the fewest things that we can. There is no possible way to prescribe moral behavior. It reminds me of the quote from Hamlet when he tells his friend, "There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than can be dreamt of in your philosophy." To think that the precepts would tell us how to act in every occurrence of reality that might come up is to flatten reality to an impossible extent. Every moment is so vivid and bright, and it's fully infused with reality that to expect a rule or a set of rules to be able to tell us how to behave in that moment is to discount what reality is. It's to not see what's right in front of us. So now that we have some kind of understanding of how we might practice the precepts, how do we understand this precept? I like to try to make it as simple as possible. I'll tell you, when I do these, I generally take one of two paths. I either read as much as I possibly can about something, or I read as little as I possibly can about something. And I'll tell you, friends, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 open books around me here. I might have overread it, but what I'll tell you is if I want to go to understand this precept, I want to go right to the very source of it in the Kyoji Kaimon, which I find it great because we have, like, it with each grave precept, we have a little piece of advice from Bodhidharma and a little piece of advice from Dogen. And so if we read about not speaking dishonestly in the Kyoji Kaimon, Bodhidharma tells us, "In the realm of the inexplicable Dharma, putting forth not one word is the precept of not speaking dishonestly." And I got to be honest, like, that's, I think it's beautiful. I don't know, like, is that really helpful? Like, to speak not one word, to put forth not one word is the precept of not speaking dishonestly. I've been assigned to give a talk to people. It would be a bit strange for me to sit here for 60 minutes and put forth not one word. So, like, what is Bodhidharma trying to tell us about this? And as best as I can understand it, the way that I think about it now is that there is no speech. There is no speech that can convey the absolute truth of our reality. That's not what speech does. Does that mean that we can live our lives in silence, sitting in like a grass hut and just meditating all day? Probably not, right? And so for me, the things that I try to carry with this precept is like, okay, there's no speech that can convey the truth. So what do I do? Because the thing is like I have to like speak. I have to interact with people. If I were to convey no speech, like I've got my taxes coming up. If I just didn't speak and didn't do anything and didn't pay my taxes, then go to jail, it would be trouble. So like I have to go forward in my everyday life, and I have to live in this world of relatives, of me and my relationships and my friends and my work. And I don't know how to do that without speaking one word. And I was reading a book recently by Kosho Uchiyama, who was a teacher from Japan, and he had this neat story about Eheiji. And what's interesting about the book is it's actually Dharma talks that he gave that are transcribed. So when you read it, sometimes it's not clear as to if he's just kind of like, I don't know, just kind of like going off on a tangent, or if what he's reading to you is like really supposed to be something important. And he talks about Eheiji Temple, which is a temple founded by Dogen. It's very, very famous. And he says about it, he's like, I'm not so sure Eheiji is great for practice, because you get a lot of tourists, you get a lot of people that are interested in seeing it. It's this great cultural institution, and it has a huge amount of cultural importance in Japan and in Zen. But in terms of practicing there, it might not be the best. If you got to keep everything up, there's this whole thing. And what he says about it is, he says that I think things of great cultural value might, when we live so much in that relative world, it might distort what we understand to be of value. There's so much relative value in that that it's hard to put it, to keep it in perspective. And I think for me, as a human who uses speech and language constantly, all the time, every day, it's easy to fall into that trap where we become attached to our speech. And not just our speech, but the reality that we construct with our speech. The narratives we say about ourselves, the narratives we say about our friends and our communities and our loved ones. I think what Bodhidharma is trying to tell me in my precept practice is to let go of my understanding of the truth, to make sure that I don't move through my day-to-day world convinced that what I say and hear and construct about my world is that truth. There's a great story in You Are Still Here, about, I think it's You Are Still Here. I'm going off script at this point, but I think it was from here. About it's a story about a Zen teacher and an academic. And the Zen teacher sits with the academic, and the academic is like, I want you to tell me like really what Zen is. And the Zen teacher gets out some teacups, as Zen teachers do, and starts pouring the teacup. And he pours the cup to the teacher all the way till it's full, and then continues to pour it, and the water overflows out of the cup. And the Zen teacher says, I can't teach this to you, just like I can't pour you any more tea. If you want to understand Zen, you have to empty your cup. You're coming to me with a full cup full of what you understand about things, and how could I possibly teach you if you don't have an empty cup? And to me, what Bodhidharma is telling me about these precepts is to make sure that I confront each moment with an empty cup. And I hope that idea of trying to approach each moment like that helps us see things differently. And I think one of the things that one of the great perspectives that we can get through precept practice is to see ourselves compassionate as precept breakers. I want to, when I come to a moment with an empty cup, that's
I'm sorry,
going to
Nick.
help. Yeah.
You cut out, I think, is to
Oh.
see ourselves how?
As compassionate precept breakers.
Precept.
Breakers of the precept. And so I think one of the important perspective shifts Bodhidharma is asking us to take is to see ourselves compassionately as liars. And, I try to think about, well, why do we lie? And I don't know how many of you have kids, but it is so fun when you have young kids and they learn about lying because they can just make some stuff up. I'll never forget. I have two boys there now, 6 and 8. But when they were both young, my oldest was just potty training. And as kids do, they have accidents when they potty train. And I go to George and I say, "Oh, buddy, looks like you pooped your pants." And he looks at me and he goes, "Nah, Josie did it." Just thought, I thought that we're still figuring out how to lie. We're working through it. But I think that there's even a lesson there, because I think that why we lie, and really from when we're very young to as we get older, we lie for the same reasons, we just get better at it. And we lie to other people, we lie to ourselves because we want to protect or preserve this version of ourselves. We want to keep ourselves, even if it's the way I think about myself. I can lie to myself and say, like, "Oh, I'm better than that. I don't really do that. That was just a one-off." We can lie to other people about, "Oh, traffic was bad. It's not that I'm irresponsible." And so we tell these lies to kind of protect this narrative that we have about ourselves. And one of the pernicious ways that I do it, and I suspect that many of us also might do it, is we tell ourselves self-deprecating lies. We tell ourselves that we're not worth it, that we're not good enough to do something, that we really should have done better. And I think that no matter what, when we are putting forth dishonesty to ourselves, to other people, we're trying to force our perspective and our narrative onto this great, grand, beautiful reality that we're living in. Mostly because I think we're probably afraid. I'm afraid of being someone that's not well liked, or someone that is actually irresponsible. And so I construct these narratives and these falsehoods to protect myself. So if I'm not supposed to do that, right, if I'm not supposed to do those things, what then? So now I'm going to go to somebody else, also in the Kyoji Kaiman. I'm going to go ask Dogen what he thinks about speaking dishonestly. And Dogen says, "The Dharma wheel turns from the beginning. There is neither surplus nor lack. The sweet dew covers the earth, and within it lies the truth." I will tell you, friends, that Dogen quote, the first time I did precept practice, I kept coming back to it. Honestly, I'm going to do my best here in a second to tell you what I think that means, but I don't know. I really don't. I don't know how many times I do that, but I have that like written on my forearm That is my Dogen quote. It says, "The sweet dew covers the earth, and within it lies the truth." And so I'm a teacher, and when I first got these tattoos, all my students were like, "Oh, cool! Like, check it out! Like, what does it say?" And I would, tell them what it says, and then they would go like, "Oh, what does that mean?" And I would at them, and I would go, "Oh, I don't really know. It sounds really nice. I don't know." I think what resonates with me when I hear that is that this absolute truth, this absolute beauty of the universe, it permeates all things at all times. It is everywhere, constantly around us. And like, you don't need to change it at all. It's everywhere, and it's so impossibly wonderful and brilliant and bright and vibrant. And I'm reminded of a line from the Precious Mirror Samadhi that says, "Just to portray it in literary form is to stain it with defilement." And it's true, but we have to. We are bags of meat that live in the world, and I want to share this with you. And I have to talk about it. I have to put words on it. I have to. It's there. But if I want to convey that idea to you, I package it up in some words. It's not great, but it's the best I've got. And I'm trying to get it out to you. And I don't want to put so much weight on it, so much weight on the way that I see it, or the way that my words make it seem, to mistake that message, that literary form, for the truth. And I think I want to give us some time to talk about it. So I think there's one last thing that I firmly believe in. And I firmly believe that every precept is fundamentally about Zazen. They don't mention it anywhere in any of the precepts, but I really believe that every precept is fundamentally about Zazen. And I'm going to guess that for one reason or another, we're all here because we've had some experience in seated meditation. And to me, that sweet dew that covers the earth is there when we sit Zazen. And we continually revisit the beauty in the universe when we just sit and we utter not one word. It's just there and we are in it. And when we start to use our words again, when we start to operate in our relative world, we don't want to see the world as divided between truth and lies, because truth and lies come are words. They're just things. There is the absolute truth that permeates everywhere. The world is not divided between truth and lies. It just is. Okay, I want to give us some time to like chat, because I know what we kind of bottled up our talk about that. So we'll open it up to like anybody who wants to say anything, really. Yeah, go for it, AJ.
Yeah, first of all, Mick, thank you so much for this talk. This was amazing. Great, great perspective. I really enjoyed hearing your insight on it. And I agree with the things that you said, and gave me a lot to think about. But I certainly agree with the fact that, when once you put things into words, truth becomes relative, and colored by the person speaking and the listener of the message, everybody bringing their own baggage to it as well. And I think that is kind of where the dishonesty comes from, in the precepts. And so the only way to get rid of that dishonesty is to not speak it, like you said. And the other thing when I think about this precept that I think about is that for me, dishonesty is not necessarily the same thing as telling the truth or not lying. I think you can say something that's maybe not 100% true, but be honest. Or I could say something that is, to my knowledge, 1,000% true, in the most dishonest way possible, based off of, what are my motives behind saying it, and things like that. And so one of the things that I shared with my small group earlier is, one of the things I learned a while ago, to try to be a good person is before I say things is to think, which is just an acronym of five things. So is it true? Is it helpful? Is it insightful? Is it necessary? And is it kind? And if I can't say yes to at least one of those things, then probably best to just not say it. And so that's something that I like to follow. And I think that is kind of in line with this precept, when I think about it. So I just wanted to share that with everybody. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you, AJ.
I actually wrote this on the board at the restaurant earlier today, and it's a rare person who curates their life around what they know instead of what's convenient. And I think that lying to yourself and lying to other people is often a very convenient and easier and more expedient thing than really being honest with yourself and being honest with other people and shaping your life out of that kind of truth.
Yeah, I really like that word curate. I feel like I have in a lot of ways tried to like in some sort of like desperate attempt to curate reality in the way that I want it to be. I want to be seen in a certain way. I want to, tell myself that I have certain attributes. And I just make these desperate attempts to curate reality to do that.
I wanted to share something I was thinking about with the Dogen quote that you have on your arm. I really like thinking about like specific word choices, and I was trying to think about why specifically do. And the thing I was thinking about is, do is something that changes all the time, right? It's a daily occurrence, but it's also small. It's not tracked in the same way that we track like the moon or the sun, and it's not so big like a mountain that we revere. It's this little ever-changing thing that is maybe not noticed by many. I just kind of liked that.
Yeah. Do you know a funny story about specific word choices? So like I had mentioned in my talk, like I loved that little quote, and I was determined. I was like, okay, I'm gonna get that as a tattoo. And so I wrote it, it's actually in my own handwriting, and I wrote it and I got to the tattoo parlor and I told him, I was like, this is what I want. And so he puts it on me, and And I'm like literally sitting in the chair and I'm like, ooh, I did that from memory. I really hope I got all the words right. So I literally like pulled up the BrightWay Zen thing on my phone, like as he's getting the needles down. I was like,
Nice.
Jill.
I really appreciate you sharing the idea that Zazen is the fundamental thing across the precepts. That really helps me think about like all the wrestling with what do these mean? I don't have to have an answer. I mean, I already knew I wasn't going to have an answer, but I do know I can do Zazen. And so it kind of, I don't know, it feels like a really nice connecting way of thinking about living the precepts. But I was also thinking about like just the experiences we have in Zazen sometimes that feel like truth. Like there, it's just like this moment of like, oh, this is truth, but you can't articulate it. And I heard an interview with Jon Kabat-Zinn once who was talking about like we have these amazing experiences and then we screw them all up by trying to talk about them. And I think like it's just an interesting weaving it all together because we're going to talk about them and it does help sometimes and it also doesn't help sometimes. So I don't know. You're going to, I appreciate like sort of just getting to wrestle with how that all works together. And thank you for sharing the Zazen tie-in.
Yeah, and you know what's so interesting to me about the Zazen tie-in is even when we try to revisit those moments, you know, the kind of the way that it's filed away in our brain is like, oh, I experienced it and it felt like A, B, and C, and D, E, and F. And as soon as you go back to that memory, that experience, it's just a little off, you know? Jinryu.
Just as you said what you last said, Mick, I have those feelings a lot as I get older, like is what I truly remembered what really happened? Because others who were involved there wouldn't, quite frankly, not describe the situation the way I did. That's not why I raised my hand, though. Why I raised my hand was the precept says, do not speak dishonestly, communicate truthfully. And we got into talking about lying. Lying is such a heavy word. While speaking dishonestly is probably the same thing. It doesn't feel quite so bad. Communicating truthfully even feels better. But the thing I always like to remind people of when we study these precepts is that the number one thing running through them all is compassion. And I am not going to beat myself up about lying. I will recognize that I'm human. I'll recognize I'm trying to do better. I will recognize that I'm trying to live my life guided by the precepts to the best of my ability. Maybe that was even a lie right there, that I'll just live my life guided by the precepts. But seriously, I think we need to be kind and warm and loving to ourselves and others, guided by these precepts.
Yeah, thank you. I hope I did not cut you off. I didn't. I think one of the someone brought this up to me, and there's like a very high probability that it was actually you, Jinryu. But when we talk about like every moment coming to us new and being reborn in every moment, that also means that we can let go of our past self from the moment ago. Like every moment of birth also involves the moment of death, and you can just leave that behind you. And to me, that was like a beautiful thing of like, you know, like I could beat myself up for it, or I could just do my best to take this next one with an empty cup. It's that time. We'll go ahead and do the closing verse, I guess. We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting so that all may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita.
Thanks, Christine. Thank you. Midnight.
Thanks, everybody.
Great job.
Thank you, Mick. Thank you. Bye. Bye, everybody.